Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Brownlee. And this week, to celebrate the total box office domination of Black Panther and February Black History Month, we are talking about Blade from 1998 for this discussion. I am joined by the single greatest daywalker I know, Mark Ahn.
Patrick and I are at the top of the food chain, everyone.
Yes, we are. We will be talking about Blade in a little bit. I want to remind everyone that coming up on March 3rd is F This Movie Fest, celebrating the films of 1989. If you are not familiar with F This Movie Fest, please go to fthismovie.com, click on the tab, and you can read all about it. It is the world's only all-Twitter film festival. Starting at noon Central Standard Time on March 3rd, we are going to be watching five films from 1989, UHF, Tango and Cash, The Burbs, Roadhouse, and Batman. And tweeting along with the films using the hashtag FThisMovieFest, it's a buttload of fun, and I hope everyone can join us. We want this to be our best fest ever.
Small tip, you don't have to take this, but if that's the first time that you're watching the movie, it might not be the best way to do it.
Although I do always try to pick movies that, like, you don't have to pay 100% attention to.
This is true.
They tend to be fun, energetic. Again, we learned this the first year. Like, Blade Runner, great movie. Not a great movie for Movie Fest.
No.
Dark Crystal, great movie. Not a great movie for F This Movie Fest. No. So there's a learning curve. But we hope you will join us. And, of course, leading up to F This Movie Fest, all next week on the site, it's 1989 week. So there will be tons of cool 1989 content from all of your favorite contributors, as well as me. So look forward to that. Mark Ahn.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything good lately?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I was trapped in a different, less populated part of the state that I live in earlier in the weekend, which means I was spending a lot of time in my hotel room.
Yes.
And I spent a lot of time watching cable TV because I normally don't have cable TV.
I like that you call it cable TV.
It is. It's cute. That's exactly what it is. It's cable TV.
You should call it pay cable.
Yeah.
Pay TV. I was watching pay TV.
And I know, because I'm a hippie and I don't have cable anymore.
Yeah. Are you like a cord cutter?
Yeah, I am a cord cutter.
Nice. That's and me. By that, you perform the snipping of the umbilical cords in the maternity wards, correct?
I thought you were going to talk about like a breast or something, but I guess not.
That
wouldn't be a cord. No, you're right. No, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Life-giving umbilical cords. That's what you snip.
It's so important, guys. You should do it. You should do it eventually.
Chew through it like Ron Perlman at the beginning of Conan.
No,
the remake, not the good one.
So I was in my hotel room a lot, and I spent a lot of time watching. Jack Reacher was on television a lot.
The original?
The Tom Cruise one. I think there was a Tom.
No, that's
Cruise.
What I mean. There's Jack Reacher, and then
Jack Reacher was originally a set of novels. Where Jack Reacher is actually
correct.
A 6'5" guy.
Right. Who sounds like The Rock.
Suspension of
but
disbelief.
But the sequel is what? Jack Reacher, never go back. Never back down.
Never back down.
Never.
It's like a Justin Bieber album.
Yeah, right?
Sure. So it's the first one. It's just Jack Reacher.
Got it. That's a good
one.
And
I think the channel that I was on was doing a Tom Cruise marathon of sorts. Because they also played, like, the following day when I flipped channels, also Oblivion was on.
Listen to our podcast on Oblivion, everyone.
Yeah, that's all.
Because I forgot that movie.
Yeah, nobody needs to know anything.
How did we talk for an hour about that movie?
It was a definitive statement about Oblivion. There's nothing else to say about it. Just listen to the podcast.
I gave my final shrug.
Thanks, Joseph Kaczynski. So I had a lovely weekend with Tom Cruise, because both of those
one has ever said that before.
Yeah, Oblivion, it was actually,
especially Katie Holmes.
Yeah, was sort of rewatchable. Jack Reacher, very rewatchable.
Yeah, I like that
movie.
It
was great. It's a good time.
But I haven't seen the sequel yet.
Yeah, you don't need to. I think Adam watched it.
He did.
He
talked me out of seeing the sequel.
No, and he was right, and I made the mistake of watching it anyway, because there was a night where I didn't have anything to do, and then I've regretted it ever since. So watch that. That was fun. And then the only other movies were the ones that you guys already talked about for end of the year stuff. So it's been a long time since I've seen a movie.
That's not true. You just saw one like a few days ago.
Oh, that's true. No, but before that was just all the Oscar stuff. It was three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri. I saw Lady Bird, The Shape of Water. It was all that end of the year stuff, which I don't want to go back into necessarily because I think you guys talked about it a lot at our end of the year show, which is great. I saw The Abyss recently in preparation for 1989 week.
Nice.
Which was great because it transported me back to junior high, which was a memorably awesome part of my life. I'm so glad I went back to it. But I'm going to write about it, so I'm not going to.
Didn't you share a locker with a water tentacle?
I'd rather not talk about that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Regarding
the court. Did it end on bad terms?
The cord cutting thing you're talking about.
Oh, right.
Life-giving. And then I also saw Black Panther this past weekend, which was phenomenal. I got to see it with a packed house. I know Adam and Rob's review should be up by now. Already.
It's already up, yeah.
And it was awesome. It was great. I don't necessarily want to bore everyone with adding on to the hype train or all the joy and all that other stuff, but have you seen it yet?
Yes.
Okay. So we can talk about it a little bit, right?
Let's do it.
I loved it. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was, I think more and more when I think about Marvel movies, the parts where they just fight are like the least interesting parts.
Yeah.
And I think this movie understood that. And so I felt like, or I don't know, maybe it's just my own attention span because I'm getting old. But it felt like there was less fighting than in other
movies.
Yeah,
there were only a handful of sort of action set pieces.
But I think the other parts were, anytime the characters were interacting, just having a conversation, just anything with the characters was great. I think when they're not talking to each other, that's when the action was happening, and I found that less interesting. But not that it's bad. I'm not saying it's bad. But I don't know. It was so much fun, and I want to go see it again immediately. And I don't know. It's just so many good things. It's so many good storytelling things happening. It's a villain that's great, which...
Yeah.
I know a lot of people are talking about it, but I won't get into it because I want people to go see it. But it's a villain who's probably a really just the best one in the Marvel movies, but I don't want to rank things. But
that's all we do, though, in Marvel movies.
I know, you have to.
And we talk about them in different terms than we talk about other movies for some reason. It's like, is it a good Marvel movie or not, as opposed to, is it a good movie or not?
Is it just a good movie? And I think this one passes the test on both fronts. I feel like it is a good movie, and it's a good Marvel movie, and I think it serves all the things that it wants to serve, which is kind of like a small miracle.
Right. Honestly. Well, again, because Marvel has become such an industry, sometimes the movies are a little bit, I don't want to say disposable, but just there, you can't always tell them apart. And I appreciated that this one stands on its own.
Yeah.
You won't confuse it with any of the other Marvel movies. I, you know, have my issues with the movie, but they are things that none of them ruined my enjoyment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think, honestly, one of its weaker aspects is the actual Black Panther character.
Yeah.
Which is not the performance and just the way that it's written, unfortunately. And that's one of the things that I have liked about other Marvel movies, oddly enough, is like, okay, the movie doesn't totally work, but they got the character right. So I'll watch the first Thor, and Chris Hemsworth as Thor will carry me through it because I enjoy the character and I thought they kind of took him to an interesting place and whatever. Even if the rest of the movie is not that great. Oddly enough, in this case, Chadwick Boseman is great. I really like his performance, but he just doesn't pop the way that some of the other characters do, and yet you don't notice because the movie is so populated by other characters who pop like crazy that it's almost like, oh, I don't care that Black Panther ends up sort of getting outshined in his own movie.
The most ordinary guy.
Because so much of the movie isn't just about him, it's about all of Wakanda and what that means.
Yeah.
And that's very, very cool. There's stuff that, again, we just don't get to see in a lot of movies, and I just could not be happier about the movie's success.
Yeah.
Because I think it's serving audiences that don't get to see this sort of thing. You know, there was stuff in this movie that, and this is not to take down Wonder Woman at all, because I enjoyed Wonder Woman. But there was some stuff on the island in Wonder Woman that, like, I wanted to love more, and I feel like Black Panther got some of that in terms of this group of badass warrior women. Because that whole last sequence is really, really fun. It's just a big battle, and it's really fun. Oddly enough, and this is, you know, a quibble, I thought the CG, in terms of a lot of the action, felt like that sort of mid-2000s Sam Raimi Spider-Man CG.
Sure.
And I thought we were past that.
Like with the animals and stuff?
I'm talking specifically with Black Panther. Yeah.
I think if you dropped him into
like Spider-Man 2 or 3, it would feel right at home. During when he's a CG, you know, when he's doing flips and all that stuff. Not when he's just walking around in the suit, he looks super cool.
Right. When he's like flipping off a car
into another
car onto a rhinoceros.
So I'm just super excited that, you know, Wonder Woman comes out and makes a ton of money and sends a specific message. Yeah. And Black Panther comes out and makes possibly even more money and sends a specific message. And I hope that it is the start of something much greater in Hollywood.
Yeah. Especially when it's a movie that's capable of just with the bigger ideas that it's trying to be about.
Yes.
That's what can sustain the conversation.
Yes.
Because the conversation is not about, oh, is Chadwick Boseman the right guy to play Black Panther? Like, that's not the conversation, thankfully.
Right.
It's just about all these other things. About the duality between a hero and a villain. And the relationship between men and women in this particular, and there's just a ton to dig into, which is really great.
And it's nice, to see a movie like this that does attempt to be about something more than just moving along the Marvel universe or introducing this character or doing an origin story or, you know, things that some of these other movies have done well.
Yeah.
This one gives you stuff you want out of a movie, but also has stuff to talk about afterwards, which
it
is
seems
nice.
To be less, there's less of a responsibility in this movie to kind of carry on the rest of the cinematic universe too. Like, oh no, we have to get all this stuff from all these other stories in there and it just seems less burdened by that, which is great.
Absolutely. It was entertaining and fun, and I'm glad to have seen it and that it's making all the money.
Yeah, and I think we'll probably in our conversation today end up referring back to it a little bit just as a reference point.
Yeah, definitely.
What about you, man?
What else did I see besides Black Panther? I checked out Suburbicon, which came out last fall. It's directed by George Clooney by way of the Coen brothers. It stars Matt Damon and Julianne Moore. As a couple in like the late 50s suburbia.
And it looks like there's something happens.
Something happens, but very little. I'll tell you that. It is not a good movie.
Oh, no, George Clooney.
I mean, it's fascinating to me. Again, I appreciate the fact that, you know, George Clooney continues to direct movies. I think he is becoming the heir apparent to Clint Eastwood. In that he's an actor who directs occasionally and his movies are wildly uneven because sometimes he'll do Good Night and Good Luck or Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, and those are movies I really like. Yeah. And then sometimes he makes Leatherheads and Suburbicon, and these are movies that no one will be talking about ever.
Did he do Monuments Men?
He did do Monuments Men, which I didn't see, so I can't shit talk it.
I think what I heard is that it's a real snoozer.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
This movie is not good, and it's him sort of trying to do a very Coen brothers thing, and it does not work. It just layers on all this weird irony and this intrusive score that I guess is supposed to tell you this is a black comedy. And, we were watching it, just getting so irritated with it, constantly saying to each other, like, this is not good, right? This is not... Oscar Isaac does show up and brings the movie to life for a few minutes, but it is not good. And I remember when it came out last year, it made zero impact, and I think might have even set some sort of record for, like, one of the lowest grossing per screen averages for a movie released on more than X number of screens.
Sure.
I don't remember the exact statistic.
It's difficult that he's trying to... Well, it's funny that you're saying that he's trying to do a Coen thing.
Yeah.
Which is... That's like the hardest of things.
Oh, yeah.
That's not an easy thing to
do. No. And you can't fake it.
No.
No.
It takes a long time.
Trying to approximate it is Suburbicon. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's the thing. It's like where it tries to do the words, but it gets the music all wrong.
Yeah, it's hard to do that. That's why there's two of them.
Right,
there's
exactly.
There's two of them, guys.
And I like George Clooney, and I'm happy that he's directing, and you know, that's all great, but I guess to go back to our Wonder Woman conversation, think about what a big deal it was for Patty Jenkins to get to direct that movie, right? George Clooney has made, like, mediocre flop after mediocre flop, and yet keeps being handed movies to direct. So there is perhaps an imbalance in Hollywood, and I just blew the lid off of it.
Oh,
yeah, that's why you guys,
the hottest of takes,
tune in. I guess what I'm saying, George Clooney, Truffaut, you are not. I guess is what I'm getting at. He will keep trying and whatever. And I saw, I saw Wonder.
Oh, yes.
Which...
It's about the child. Julia Roberts, right?
Roberts. So he's born with a facial deformity.
Sure.
And he, you know, changes people's lives. And that's what the trailer looked like. And I was like, no, thank you. And so many people around me were going to see it. And, oh, it's wonderful. Oh, and I read the book and everything that...
Right.
It was like pushing me away, right? So the other night we had a movie night and my son picked Wonder. I want to watch Wonder. And I was like, well, that's great.
You did this to yourself.
But I was happy that he picked that instead of some, you know, the Squeakquel or something. Right. Like, he picked Wonder. Let's support that. And I was incredibly pleasantly surprised. I think it's still sort of the movie that it was marketed as.
Right.
But so much better and more interesting than the sort of TV movie that I thought it might be,
right,
about the magical boy who changes our lives. I thought it had a lot of things to say about being young and being part of a family and feeling overlooked and not from his perspective.
Sure.
So I was very pleasantly surprised. I actually thought it was really good. And I didn't realize until I was watching it that the person who adapted the book and directed the film is like Stephen Chbosky. I might be saying that wrong. He had done The Perks of Being a Wallflower, which was another movie that was like, it could have been this generic piece of shit, right, but was more thoughtful and human.
Well, good.
And Wonder is very much that. So I was really pleasantly surprised.
Good job, Charlie.
Right. Yeah. And then the last movie I'll talk about is a movie called Band-Aid, which came out last year and just showed up on pay TV.
Okay.
And so I DVR'd
the cable.
It is written and directed by Zoe Lister-Jones, who is an actor that you may recognize. I think I knew her from the short-lived Whitney Cummings sitcom Whitney.
Oh,
is that what it was called?
That's right. It was called Whitney.
So I had to watch some episodes of that for a gig that I used to have where I covered comedy and stand-up comedy. And I didn't love the show. It was pretty generic.
Sure.
And now she... And I did not like her character on that show. And I was like, you're the sarcastic friend. This thing was made by a robot. Anyway, again, what a pleasant surprise that she wrote and directed this movie and does a really terrific job with it. She wrote the songs because it's essentially about her and Adam Pally. As a married couple that is having all these terrible fights and has experienced some sadness in their past and is maybe thinking about splitting up, and then they come upon the idea to start a band and they write songs about all their fights, and that helps them process.
It's like Taylor Swift.
Exactly.
Right.
And everyone, you know, they are people who know people, because everyone who shows up in the movie is someone you recognize. Fred Armisen shows up to play their drummer, and he's very funny. Everyone is somebody, so it's one of those movies that's just fun to watch. The songs are good. Some of what it has to say about relationships I think is really interesting. Some of it is bullshit movie stuff, but I liked enough of it to absolutely recommend it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Band-Aid.
Not bad, Band-Aids. Right? Band-Aid. Band-Aid.
You said you ran into it on the cable TV.
It's on the cable TV, but it's available to rent and stuff. I don't think it's streaming for free anywhere, but you can certainly rent it on iTunes or Amazon or whatever.
Good enough.
Let's talk about Blade. Here's the thing. Everyone's excited about Black Panther, and so am I, and it's great. And everyone's like, finally, you know, Marvel has their first black superhero. But guess what? Like 20 years ago, by the way, this movie's 20 years old.
I know.
Marvel had a black superhero that people seem to overlook and don't really talk about. Also, I would maybe make a case that Blade is the reason not just that there's a Black Panther movie, but that there's a third Avengers movie coming out and three Thor movies and three Captain Americas. This really was the start of the superhero movie.
Yeah, the modern
wave.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really get credit for that because I think a lot of people point to X-Men in 2000 or Spider-Man in 2002. And of course, those movies were incredibly successful and really kickstarted sort of the genre as we know it now. But I don't think those movies get made without Blade.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So this movie's a big deal. And yeah. So we thought with Black Panther out, wouldn't it be fun to go back and revisit the OG black superhero, Blade?
Okay.
Scott Blade is his name, right?
George
Blade.
George Blade. I don't know. One of the funny things I think about this character in particular was I read a little bit about the history of the character, not in the movie, obviously, but just some of the comic history. But originally, he was apparently not a vampire. He was just a dude that was impervious to being a vampire for some reason.
I am too.
He didn't.
Because there are no vampires. Yeah. So good luck making me a vampire.
I eat a lot of garlic bread, everybody. But he didn't become the sort of vampiric sort of superhuman person until
the Daywalker
later. Yeah. Until later on in the character's history. okay. First question.
Yes. Here we go.
How important, especially just in the movie version, not thinking about the comics. I don't think I really know Blade on the comics that well anyway. So, but how important is it that Blade is a black character?
To this movie or just in general?
To the movie. And then we'll get to larger context afterwards.
Huh. I don't know. I honestly haven't really thought about his race within the context of the story.
Which is good.
Yeah.
And bad.
Okay.
Sort of.
Okay.
In the sense of, it's awesome that it's Wesley Snipes. It's awesome that black, minority character, which is awesome. But it's also, I guess, and I don't know if I'm too colored by my Black Panther lens, where the fact that he's black.
Wearing these sunglasses that are called Black Panthers. They look a lot like Oakleys. Do you guys remember Oakleys?
Oh,
yeah.
That's
calls them Black Panthers.
That's on the list of the most 1998 things possible.
along with the CGI and Blade.
Right, along with Steven Dorff is the most 1998 thing possible. No, but I was thinking about, Black Panther, it's so important that the character is black.
Sure.
That the other characters are black, that it's representing this black culture. But I feel like that's that sort of cultural impetus is sort of missing from Blade a little bit, that it almost doesn't matter that he's black, that it doesn't matter, that he could have been sort of anything else.
Sure.
And I don't know if that's good or, I don't know, I'm not trying to make it good or bad, I guess.
Are you wanting him to be Korean? Is that where this is going?
Korean Blade, guys. Korean Blade. That's a different movie called Ninja Warrior. What was the ninja movie with the Korean pop star?
Ninja Warrior. Oh, Ninja Assassin.
Ninja Assassin. Ninja Thank Assassin. You very much. We already have that movie.
Yeah.
We got gifted that in 2000.
I don't dislike Ninja Assassin.
I don't either.
I think find it pretty entertaining.
I also think it's highly
very
entertaining
bloody.
That Stephen Colbert had a
oh my gosh, this whole thing with Rain.
Feud with
yes.
Rain,
oh my gosh.
Ninja Assassin, which is
but great. Isn't Naomi Harris like the sidekick in that movie?
Possibly, yes.
I'll take it.
That's fine.
Any
That's
Naomi fine. Harris is good Naomi Harris.
No,
so here's the thing.
No,
I haven't really thought about this, although I think maybe in the back of my head I kind of did, but now that you're bringing it up, I agree that perhaps his race isn't necessarily important to the character, except that, the character in the comics was black, so had they cast a white guy,
fuck
this movie forever, right? Wesley Snipes seems born to play it.
Yes.
Because you watch the movie and you're like, well, thank God they cast Wesley Snipes because he's a guy who can actually do this stuff.
Right.
And it makes so much of a difference when you get to watch someone doing their own fight choreography, and he's really good at it.
Do you want to hear a fun fact?
Of course.
They originally, casting news is always fun, originally LL Cool J was interested in playing Blade back in the 90s.
No, that's a mistake.
Which I'm like, no.
That's a mistake. And let's talk about, well, okay. We'll come back to that. Because this movie in 1998 is kind of a miracle, honestly.
Yeah.
When you think about what was going on with comic book adaptations / superhero movies. Like, when you have Shaquille O'Neal playing Steel right around the same time, the fact that this movie comes out and kicks ass and is very confident and knows exactly what it wants to be is a miracle. So I've always enjoyed the movie as sort of a modern blaxploitation film. I don't feel like it has necessarily the energy of a blaxploitation film, but a lot of what I like about certain Wesley Snipes movies, whether it's this or Passenger 57 or there's another one I can't think of, is that it's entirely about him as a black man going in and fucking up a white man's world.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. And that's exactly what Blade is. It's like, not
true.
These people aren't just white. Like, they're super white. They're fucking vampires. Right. They have no blood. They're as pale white as they come.
Sure.
And he and Nebuchadnezzar Wright just get to go around and, you know, if this had been Fred Williamson and Pam Grier in 1974, it would be one of my favorite movies ever, you know? So
I love this version.
I enjoy it on that level. Again, I think it's a lot sort of slicker than the blaxploitation movies of the 70s, obviously, just because of the language of filmmaking and everything. But I don't feel like Stephen Norrington is particularly influenced by blaxploitation.
No,
but I think it can absolutely be enjoyed on that level.
Yeah. I like the blaxploitation rating. I hadn't thought of it that way. I think one way that it does work, this works on a thematic level, not necessarily on a, like, this is the feel you get from the movie, but the fact that he's the daywalker.
Yeah.
By the way, guys, spoilers for a movie that's 20 years old.
Yeah.
I guess we should just get that out of the way. But the fact that he's the daywalker, right, is that he's, like, that's the thing that makes him weird. Right.
Right.
You're the weird one because you have all this stuff and you're this weird hybrid of all these other things.
Right.
And I guess that could be like the sort of analog for his, that he's like, you're the other, you're the minority, you're the strange.
Well, and the movie is somewhat concerned with this idea of lineage, because even within the vampire community, you have pure vampires who were born vampires. You have vampires who were turned. So they are sort of looked down upon. And then you have the Daywalker, who is this third thing, right, who stands apart. So there are some of these questions about bloodline and
class.
I wouldn't call it like racism within the vampire community, but it's something akin to that.
Yeah. I just think that that doesn't necessarily, I don't know, not that it doesn't work, but I guess it's different in the sense that he, as the daywalker, he's not like the trod upon figure, right? That he's actually this sort of like weird, reluctant savior. Like, oh,
yeah,
because you have the qualities that you have, that might actually end up saving all of us. So that was kind of the first, that was like the analog I saw. But I like your blaxploitation reading a lot better. I think that works a lot more. I just like the fact that he just wants to mess things up, right? He's like on the, it makes sense too, because he's like on a revenge mission. That's why he's doing
right.
All this
stuff. Well,
I mean,
just think about that opening scene, which is amazing and so confident and just absolutely sets up this world so beautifully, of this rave where they're, you know, pouring blood down onto the vampires. And then he shows up in one of the great cool guy entrances ever and just proceeds to fuck up a room full of, you know, white folks. And the few other black folks we see are those who are in cahoots with the vampires, right?
Yeah.
So you have these black men who are willingly working with the vampire / white community. They got to go too.
Yeah. What do you, okay, and I don't know if I was imagining this, and
okay,
I don't know if the
you
time, probably, I do this all the time. Am I in Patrick's basement right now? But how much, like, I just felt like there was a lot of what was in this movie also laid the foundation I don't know, directly, indirectly, with so many other movies I felt like I saw afterwards.
Okay.
Just in terms of, like, other vampire movies, like all the ridiculous Underworld movies that I watched.
Oh, for sure.
Right? The whole, like...
Yes.
Vampires as Eurotrash.
Yes. Even the sort of... The gunmetal blue cold cinematography,
right.
The whole leather aesthetic of
right,
Blade,
club music. Vampires are really into nightlife, guys.
Yeah, well, they have no daylight.
Right, they can't.
I don't particularly like any of the Underworld movies.
You don't,
of the ones I've seen.
You don't have to.
I don't let Heather hear me say that.
I'm going to keep watching them, though.
Are you really?
I can't help it.
I think I tapped out after three, which means I have two to catch up on.
You'll get to it. You have laundry.
Will I?
You have laundry to fold, right?
Yeah,
it's
but
fine.
I
just
would
put
much
it on.
Rather
it'll be fine.
Rewatch something I've seen.
It'll be totally fine. So I think it lays a foundation for so much of like the vampire stuff that we see in like especially like science fiction movies like this, right? That there's a secret. They have like a secret history and they have like a secret language and there's like these ancient texts and there's like a prophecy or some kind of nonsense. Like there's like a you know a hierarchy or whatever. I also feel, and the Matrix came out the next year, and I'm not going to say that the Wachowskis are watching Stephen Norrington do whatever, but it's also like there's a lot of parallels between the two. So I don't know if that was like a direct.
Well, that's again, that's why I say this movie feels kind of like a miracle because, I mean, I'm not saying it's like wildly ahead of its time, but it does seem. To be maybe more of its time than a lot of other stuff, which seem to be playing catch up.
Right.
And it does, as you said, predict a lot of things. And it's not a movie that often gets credit for that, I don't think. I remember seeing the movie opening weekend in 1998. And it was the day that I came down with an appendicitis. So I sat through this movie with an appendicitis.
Perfect.
Just in such pain, not really knowing why. I didn't know it was appendicitis. And then that night went to see Dead Man on Campus for a second time because I had seen it the night before.
Was that more or less painful than the appendicitis?
Also, well, it was my second time. Wow. Clearly, I was into it. With an appendicitis once again. Woke up Sunday, worked all day on Sunday. Finally, Sunday night was like, I think I need to go to the hospital.
Patrick's tougher than you guys.
And then I was admitted for several days and had surgery. So Blade is a movie that I will always associate with getting my appendix taken out and sitting through it in absolute pain, but still really digging it. And even just from those opening moments where we see the baby being born and there's this hard cut to black on Sanaa Lathan, by the way, who's like, holy cow.
Yeah.
As the mom, she's reaching out to her son. And there's this hard cut to black, and the title is there, and then it opens up on that cool club sequence. And I just remember even in 1998 and again today watching it, there's such, and I've used this word already, but there's such confidence to the way that this movie is made, and Norrington is making choices that I don't feel like other filmmakers were making at the time, specifically not in this sort of action, superhero, martial arts, horror movie, science fiction hybrid, that I recognized the language of the film as feeling very different in 98. And I think it still feels different, as we can see even from the two Blade sequels that followed, which I'm sure we'll get to.
Yeah.
Each one feels very different from the other. And I don't know that I would argue that this is my favorite of the three, but I don't have much to complain about. Like, this movie kicks ass.
Yeah. And I don't think, and oddly enough, whatever the director was doing in this movie kind of just never worked for him again. Because I was looking through his filmography.
It's a fucking bummer. Well, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah. That was the one that stuck out.
Which, and I swear he like quit directing after that.
Well, I mean, Sean Connery quit life after that.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone had just a miserable time on that movie. And again, it's such a bummer because the way he frames certain things, and even, you know, I'm no fan of shaky cam.
Sure.
But there's some an early version of shaky cam in this movie that is done to give the fight scenes a different visual energy, and it's not Paul Greengrass shaky cam
like where it's constant,
where it's making you sick, and it's to provide the illusion of kineticism when right. maybe there isn't. I find this very effective because it's just a little bit more subtle and it feels more like the way they used to move the camera in Shaw Brothers movies. They wouldn't right. shake it, but there would be crazy zooms and shit, you know,
right.
To sort of underscore the movement. And so I think he's doing some really it's an interesting sort of contemporary spin on that same visual language.
Yeah. I think you see that in the speed ramping that he does sometimes.
Yeah.
Like he did it in the first car chase. He does it to isolate vampire characters specifically, right? That they move differently
right.
than this other one. So yeah, I hear what you're saying. I was just sad that he just hadn't made it. I was like, who directed this?
Yeah.
Stephen Dorrington? I don't know this guy. And then I looked up, I'm like, oh, he's made a bunch of duds. And what happened?
I have to look up what else he did because I can't, it's not coming to mind right now. There's that little beat that I love that I rewound today because I had forgotten it. And then as soon as I saw it, I was like, yeah, I remember loving that in 1998. It's one of those sort of time lapse sequences where, you know, it's nighttime in the city now and yeah. we're whipping around. And just briefly, it whips past a corner where a vampire is attacking a woman.
It's like biting into her, yeah.
And it's just this little detail that says, like, they're everywhere. This is happening all the time. It's just this nice... And I'm not, you know, the world's biggest, like... I will rarely praise a film's world building. I sometimes think we give too much credit to that idea. Right. Like, you know, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets does a lot of world building, but the movie still doesn't work for me, right? But it is this little detail that doesn't detract from the movie, doesn't take much screen time, and yet I think goes a long way towards establishing the world in which Blade exists.
Yeah. I think one, just thinking of like little moments that I liked, I think one of the things that I really liked actually was I think I like this sequence. Like if this ever came on television and I was watching it, I'd be like, well, I need to go sit down for the next 20 minutes now. It's the scene where they're sort of infiltrating the vampire base and they have to go and they go downstairs and they go through the freezer door, which is great. And they have to go downstairs and they go through the archive or whatever the hell it is. And then they run into like the fat vampire.
Oh my gosh.
Thing. And he's like grossly, grotesquely fat. He's disgusting, but he's like the IT guy, so that's where they bury him in the basement. And then I'm like, that's awesome that it's just this like grossly fat vampire, that there are not all these sleek looking sort of Euro trash.
And it's sort of the most like out there thing in the movie, because with the exception of vampires, which is a big conceit,
right.
the movie is more or less grounded, right? Everybody looks like regular people and except for that. And it's like all of a sudden the movie takes a hard turn into this sort of grotesque horror. And the way that whole sequence is handled, where they're burning him with that UV light and he's making this awful
squeak.
And the way he breathes afterwards, it's horrifying. I was watching it today and honestly, for the first time, I found myself being like, they're taking this too far. Like, these are the heroes.
Right.
And I know we're supposed to be like, well, that guy's got to come and he's a vampire and fuck vampires. But the brutality with which they torture him, I really was kind of like, wow, okay. That's not often what we see our heroes do. And Blade, you know, for all of his cool guy swagger and shit, he's not presented as an anti-hero. He's just a hero. And yet he indulges in this horrible torture.
Yeah, they try to make him, I think, I don't know how successful, but they try to make him this sort of emotionless guy, right? Like, oh, I'm tough. It's fine. I just need my serum. I just need to do my Zen meditation and all that stuff. I think they try to turn him into something more human after Whistler dies at that part of the movie.
Luckily, he doesn't.
Yeah.
Because he comes back in part two.
Comes back, right, which I forgot about.
Which is lame. Just leave him dead.
Right, exactly.
The character of Blade is one of the things I like least about this movie, which I guess echoes Black Panther again.
Sure.
Because I just don't think there's much of a character there, and because Wesley Snipes, who notoriously, you know, remained in character during all of the Blade movies, if you've never heard the stories that, like, Patton Oswalt has told about working on Blade Trinity, seek them out because they're very funny. No one had a good time on that movie at all. I think you could just listen to the director's commentary on that disc and it's David Goyer and Jessica Biel and Ryan Reynolds, and they're sort of talking around the fact that no one liked Wesley Snipes and got along with Wesley Snipes, and he's clearly a guy who was going through some shit, right? Yeah.
Taxes are hard,
though. Right, but just never got out of character, and you had to call him Blade, and he just was difficult, I guess. And part of that choice, I think, is that like he always has to be super cool.
Sure.
And I'm just never into the character who's always super cool, right, no matter what.
Yeah.
So later superhero movies draw me in a little bit more in terms of the actual character. I don't find the actual character of Blade all that compelling.
Right.
As an action hero, he's fine, yeah, but I don't, you know, I think the sequel actually does more to make him interesting.
Yeah. I would agree. I think in the first one, because I think initially you and I were talking about doing maybe the second one instead of the first one.
Yes.
To record.
Do you like the second one better?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think I might like the second one better because I like the Del Toro stuff. I might like the second one better because I think I like the other characters better too. I don't know. It's hard.
Well, it does give him more of a supporting cast and sort of a world
and,
to walk in.
They're more fun. But I think in the first movie, despite all of his notorious difficulties, like you can tell like he's having a lot of fun. Like I feel like Wesley Snipes is enjoying the hell out of being Blade.
Which is
great.
Yeah. I think he would have played Blade for the rest of his life if he could have.
He wants to.
By the way,
that's cool.
Did you ever watch the Blade TV show?
No.
I forgot that it existed until right now. I never watched it either.
Okay. Well,
the character is a little bit inconsistent in this one. I mean, he's so grim and serious and he chooses to talk in that voice. But then every once in a while, like, that little gif that I texted you where he does that fist pump. It's like, well, who's that guy? That seems to be.
Yeah, that's the one funny thing that he did the entire movie.
Yeah. I mean, there's like two or three smiles and those are okay because, again, it's him sort of bursting his cool guy bubble for 1 second and showing you like, oh, he enjoys this. But the fist pumping seems to be like, who's that for?
I do enjoy that one of the running gags in the movie is Blade continually chopping off limbs of Donald Logue's character.
It's
awesome. It keeps happening.
And his reaction the second time in the train tunnel where he just runs, he's like so surprised and then turns and runs away. It's great.
Oh, man. That's a good time.
He seems to be having a good time in the movie. Like, I feel like, you know, the movie occasionally will go for jokes and it doesn't always work, but I don't think it ever pushes it into that territory where you're like, oh my God, stop trying to be funny.
Right.
Like, I think it does a good enough job of sort of skirting that line of, it's not especially funny, but it's also not trying too hard to be. Those moments when it does try, it doesn't always work, but it never takes me out of the movie.
Sure. Do you want to talk about really, really 1998 things?
Yeah.
Let's do it. I think, so definitely Stephen Dorff is one of the most 1998 of all things.
Yeah, so let's talk about...
Okay. Is this the best movie that Stephen Dorff was in?
Surely he's been in other good movies.
I just couldn't think. I can't picture him in anything else, unfortunately.
I liked his Sofia Coppola movie. Did you ever see that?
Yeah.
Somewhere?
No, I didn't. I heard that was good, but I didn't see it.
It's good. I like it. I mean, not everybody likes it. But it's weird because he does seem a little bit JV compared to Wesley Snipes.
Right.
And I think some of that is just because it was 1998 and because bigger actors weren't necessarily interested in doing this kind of a movie. You're talking about New Line. It's a fairly low budget studio.
Sure.
A character that not a ton of people are familiar with. So it's not, you know, the Batman series, which had kind of shit the bed by this point, where you had giant stars wanting to play the villains in those movies because they'd get a big paycheck and it was a big deal. So I don't know the caliber of actor that they were able to draw. They get Stephen Dorff. He's fine. Like, he's doing a little bit too much of, like, I'm a bad guy and I love it. Like, I don't think Deacon Frost is very interesting.
Yes.
I'm into his stuff in the movie less. At the same time, there's something kind of interesting about him wanting to wipe out all the vampires who sort of won't accept him to sort of wipe out the old guard and say, I'm the new punk rock vampire and this is what we're going to be from now on. I don't like any of the blood god stuff, and just the words blood god are so lazy.
Very 1998.
I mean,
skulls popping out of people's bodies.
Well, okay. So that's the 1998 thing is the CG.
Right.
I think in 98 it was probably fine.
Yeah.
I think so much of this movie holds up specifically because of the photography and the editing and the music. I think it still feels contemporary except for the CG.
Yeah. Apparently, originally, that confrontation.
Yeah. Did you watch it? It's on the DVD.
No, I didn't see it. The original confrontation, for I guess everybody else's amusement, was going to just be Stephen Dorff turning into the Blood God.
They filmed it.
Which was just apparently a tornado of red blood.
That's exactly what it is. And then every once in a while, Stephen Dorff's like upper torso pops out of it and like mocks Blade, and you can literally see like the cutoff line where I mean it's
it's not good.
So it's on the DVD. I'm sure you could find it on YouTube. Thank God they went another way. This was one of the first DVDs I think I ever owned. And I remember buying it at Tower Records, saving up my $20,
rest in peace.
Buying it at Tower Records because New Line had great DVDs. They had this Platinum series and they had tons of extras and stuff. So I bought this and I remember watching that original ending and just thinking, oh boy, did they make the right choice to go back and reshoot this.
That's hilarious.
Because the CG is bad already. And again, it's used fairly sparingly.
Yeah, I think it's fair. Yeah.
Like, I like the idea of the the way the vampires sort of dissolve, turn to dust.
Yeah.
It's sort of like Buffy, but a little bit different. And the CG is not perfect, but it functions okay.
Yeah.
There are some moments like when the girl vampire's head explodes, it doesn't totally work, or when those two henchmen
the ninjas,
get the serum. Yeah,
Which is so great. And so
it is. I mean, it's the movie leans into horror more than I remembered.
Yeah.
Because there are moments like that, or like the big obese guy being burned, or where it's like, oh shit, this movie's not fucking around.
Gross.
Udo Kier's demise in particular seems to be a hybrid of CG and practical, and the practical stuff is what makes it work.
Yeah.
And I do love the shot where all the other vampires sort of step back when he explodes.
Ooh.
It's really cool.
I don't want that on my shoes.
Yeah. So the CG is hard to pull off. And unfortunately, when we get to the winged skeletons bursting out of the OG vampire's mouths, it's like, well, this effect is not working. And also, huh? Like,
right.
You can't just make up the rules as you go along, movie. But the blood is the biggest problem.
Yeah.
And CG blood has always been a problem. So I was watching it today wondering, like, gosh, if they went back and fixed this CG, would the movie be better? And the answer is no. Yeah. A, don't fuck with your movie, George Lucas. And B, they still haven't gotten it right. I mean, it is notoriously, like, so hard to do because it's just unconvincing to try to do. For whatever reason, blood. They could do CG water that looks pretty convincing.
Yeah.
But blood never does. And so when we get to the end where we're very reliant on a lot of CG blood.
Yeah. And I think that ending is kind of okay in the sense of I think the final battle between Frost and Blade was always going to be a little bit disappointing anyway. I find like with so many action movies, like it's not like the big confrontation at the end that's the most fun. It's like the one that was like in the middle of the movie that's the most fun. And I find
or it's like the henchman and not the main bad guy.
Right. But fun fact that might affect the final battle was apparently they were trying to cast Jet Li as Deacon Frost, but he didn't do it because he was committed to doing some, I think, Lethal Weapon, I don't know, something else.
Yeah,
he
this
was
came out the same year as Lethal Weapon 4.
Yeah, so he's committed to doing that.
Which is a garbage pile of a movie that underuses him, so wouldn't it have been a better movie?
Come on, Jet.
Get to see Jet Li and Wesley Snipes fight?
That would have been awesome.
We had to wait till what? Expendables
3.
3? Yeah. They didn't fight. They just
were in the same place.
We're in the same place.
They made short jokes. Anyway, I thought that would have been awesome. Him as Deacon Frost would have been great. Fun fact.
That is a fun fact.
That is a super fun
fact. Yeah, definitely watch the original deleted ending because it is a CG nightmare. And thank goodness they went with just, I guess, jacked up Deacon Frost.
Right, like, how would you even fight a cloud of blood?
Oh, it is rough. Yeah, and then he just like good. Kicks the serum into the blood tornado.
Oh.
It's so...
That's how it works.
It does not work at all. And I like how this one resolves where he hits him with a bunch of them. And then we, of course, have to talk about his last line.
Okay. You have to say the line because I don't remember the line.
Some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill.
Okay. So like the fist pump, it just feels like something out of a completely different movie.
Like a thing that Wesley Snipes really wanted to say, because it's, I guess, a cool line, but I don't know how it applies.
Sure.
Whose benefit he's saying it for.
Right. He isn't particularly a verbal character.
Right, exactly.
He's not a talker.
Right.
No. Yeah, he's not like a one-line quipper. Right, he's not like a James Bond kind of dude. I don't know.
Or even a Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Even a stick around.
Yeah, no, none of that.
He had to split.
Right, just if he doesn't swear that much, actually.
Bennett, screw you.
Right,
Benny.
If Bennett
screw
was
you, Bennett is commando.
Yes,
let off some steam, Bennett.
Right,
Frost. I confused Bennett and Benny from Total Recall.
How dare you?
I feel bad.
How dare you?
Listen, no one feels worse about this than me. No one is going to punish me more than me
for this blade.
Yeah.
But yeah, that line comes out of nowhere. It feels like this is what it feels like. I feel like it was a late night in the writer's room and David Goyer was on his fifth tequila and he said, you know what? You know what'll be great? This!
I know
a mixed metaphor!
And I know that there are people who love it and I guess taken on its own, it's fine. But let's not conflate it with something like I've come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. Right. Which is also, to be fair, coming from a character who's not especially verbal. And like for him to all of a sudden walk in and announce his arrival in They Live doesn't make much sense, but it's the greatest thing ever and it's Roddy Piper, so we forgive it. Its placement is weird, but whatever. You know.
That's fine.
It's fine.
Other
1998 things.
Oh, Dr. Karen Henson's shirt. It's very 1998. Remember when every nice dress shirt was like this sort of weird, shiny, glittery material? That was very 1998.
I feel bad. I watched this movie today and took no notice of
her
shirt.
You don't need to.
By the way, she's terrific in this movie, and how come she didn't go on to do more?
Right. Where'd she go?
I feel like, was she in Set It Off?
She was in Dead Presidents.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm confusing it with.
I didn't see Dead Presidents.
Dead Presidents is fucking awesome, and it's criminal that...
I haven't seen it.
There is no Blu-ray. There's just
what?
This, again, like non-anamorphic DVD. That movie's so good, and I wish it would get a second life or rediscovered somehow, you know?
It should. I think the music is very 1998, like the club sort of rave music.
Yeah, but isn't that also like if you were to walk into a rave now, would you hear something similar?
Wait, there's raves now?
I assume.
What?
When you're not going to raves?
People
I feel
in the
like
comments
I don't
tell us.
Even know you.
People in the comments tell us. Are there still raves now?
Don't even know you.
Patrick
it's like, oh, now it would be like EDM, right? Is this EDM?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Is that a thing they do in they do that in Vegas, right?
Don't they have like they do it everywhere. There are festivals.
Is that a thing where you just don't have a shirt on and then you jump around?
Yeah, you practice like cultural appropriation and you carry a little backpack and you...
Without a shirt.
Probably do ecstasy.
I really feel like the without
what
a
I'm
shirt
doing is
really important.
Is I'm making assumptions, and I'm glad if you love EDM. I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
so
one time
I'm not judging it.
The one time I went to Vegas, what just happened to be the same weekend as a gigantic EDM festival.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the proper verbiage is. Festival? Concert?
I believe they
conference?
Call it a festival. An EDM. I think it was an EDM conference.
Let's go to the EDM conference, guys. I'll see you at the 10 o'clock.
Summit?
Yeah, Summit.
Summit?
Talks? Peace conference? And then it was just this hodgepodge of people walking in. I'm just wearing my normal clothes and then everyone doesn't have shirts on. I'm like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. This is how we check into a hotel in
Should
Vegas.
You should have murdered everyone like you were Blade.
I would have.
Because they were vampires, right?
Right. I didn't have
I do not advocate murdering people.
Vampires, though, are okay.
Yeah.
It's totally fine.
So is the Tracy Lords cameo because she was sort of plugged into that scene in 1998? She was, like, releasing, like, dance music albums at that point.
Huh.
Yeah.
That would make
sense.
And
that's literally the only thing I know about Tracy Lords.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
I thought she was... Didn't she do some sort of, like, softcore porn or something?
No, she did hard... I was joking. She did hardcore porn when underage.
Well, I thought...
I know a great deal about Tracy Lords. I've read her book.
Well, vampires are into that, right?
I read her book. She wrote a book. I read it. I don't remember what it was called.
How was the book?
But I... Not good.
I bet it was a pun about... I bet it was a pun on Lords. No problem.
I don't think it was. All right, keep talking. I'm now going to look up the title of the Tracy Lords
book.
Okay.
That's totally okay. What are other things I can talk about? Okay. I don't understand why Wesley Snipes also said that he tried to get he wanted to do circling back to Black Panther, that he actually was interested in doing a Black Panther movie of some sort back in the 90s. And then part of it was he was interested, but then they couldn't really get the right director to get attached to it. Apparently John Singleton was, I don't know about attached, but they were talking to him about it. And then John Singleton was doing his John Singleton thing of like, oh, we should make this sort of civil social justice sort of issue, which I think would have been cool. But then at the same time, I don't know if anybody would go and watch that necessarily, especially when it's like there's like vampires and I don't know, like what kind of mix
now
that would
that
have
we
made.
Now that we live in the world that we live in, where we have a successful Black Panther movie directed by Ryan Coogler, who's great.
Yep.
If I could be guaranteed that we would get the same timeline,
yep.
I would love to now have a John Singleton directed Wesley Snipes starring Black Panther movie from like the late 90s.
Yeah.
Because what would that look like? Like, I feel like I know what that would look like, and it probably wouldn't be great because, again, of the time period in which people were trying to pull this stuff off. But now I wish we had it. If I knew that it wasn't going to derail what was to come.
Right.
Which is the good Black Panther movie.
John Singleton, where are you at? We miss you.
He's making movies with Taylor Lautner,
yeah,
I believe.
He did Abduction?
Yeah, which I didn't see.
That's weird. That seems like a little bit different than what I expected him to do.
So. Yeah, well, his career took an interesting...
Yeah. We miss you coming back.
Path.
Did you have a comment about the LL Cool J thing? I think you were going to say
just that I think I know, again, that sounds right with like what this movie could have been given the time period. And like if you told me, yeah, LL Cool J made a Blade movie in 1997, I would be like, yeah, of course. Of course that's a thing that happened.
Right.
And I'm glad that it didn't come to pass, obviously, because I think... Again, the fact that this movie takes the material seriously, plays it straight, is cool, is good, works as an action movie, helped pave the way for Fox to, you know, kick out the money to make X-Men.
Yeah.
Which, you know, shares some similar aesthetic choices with. Because again, when you think about that early X-Men movie where it's like, oh, they can't wear suits, they have to wear matching black leather because we were just so afraid of like looking too silly. And now look where we are. Look at Thor Ragnarok. I mean, it's bananas how far we've come in the last 20 years in terms of this stuff.
Is there a chance... Not that there's a chance. If they were to remake Blade, not that they have to, but if they were to, do we have the requisite black action star who could do it?
Gosh.
Because Wesley Snipes he's on the Mount Rushmore, right?
Yeah.
Of black action stars.
Yeah.
Of just action stars in general.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But like, I don't know if there's another guy.
Michael J. White, I think, could do it. I think he's older than that anybody would want to cast, but I mean, that dude still got it. I just watched him in Accident Man, and he is not
I remember Accident Man.
Ray Park fight Scott Adkins. It's a three-way fight.
I'm going to go see that right now.
I mean, and the movie's not great, but like, I mean, that scene, forget it. And then Scott Adkins has a fight with, oh my God, what's her name? The super pretty blonde from
Ronda Rousey?
Lady Blood Fight. No, nope. No. Oh, God. She's so good and needs her own franchise. Lindsay something.
Nice.
I'm looking up everything today, by the
way. It's okay, guys.
Underneath It All is the name of the Tracy Lords book. So there's still implied nudity, but it's classy.
Yeah.
Because really she's talking about revealing herself. See, right. You think she's talking about her naked body because she started out in the pornography.
Right.
But really she's revealing herself.
Here's what you really want, fellas. Here's what you really, really want.
I'm so ashamed that I didn't. Amy Johnston. Oh my God.
How dare you?
Amy Johnston.
How dare you?
She has a fight with Scott Adkins that's worth the price of admission. So the movie's not great, but there's some good fighting.
I hope someday in the future we can do an entire podcast on Scott Adkins movies.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
I mean,
listen, I don't know if anybody else will listen, but
I don't want him to play Blade because
that would
he's
be weird.
The wrong race.
That'd
but,
be weird.
He needs to be handed somebody to
That'd
play.
Be very, very strange.
Right?
I feel like they didn't need to make Blade 3.
Well, no.
I mean, if we're talking about need to do
Blade 3 is a massive disappointment.
What I need to do is to floss every day, but I don't do that either. Anyway.
I really like Blade 2. And again, I think that's a movie where the CGI probably does not hold up at all.
Yeah.
But my memory is that I like that it got weirder. And like more sort of grotesque in terms of, you know, the vampires with the big jaws that open and all that shit. But what I remember really liking about it is how crazy Shakespearean it gets by the end of the movie. And that Blade is almost does nothing more but bear witness to this centuries old family squabble.
I'm sure.
Super interesting. And I really love that stuff. So my memory is that Blade 2 is my favorite of the series. I would probably need to rewatch it now this close to Blade. And man, Blade Trinity is a movie that I think almost nothing works.
There's just too many things. There's too many parts. There's too many people.
The notion that like Blade is going to fight Dracula is interesting on paper, but then you cast Dominic Purcell,
right?
And Dracula is like not even.
He's pretty boring.
A Buffy villain of the week. I mean, he's just so not good. Parker Posey seems to be having fun.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds is having a good time.
Triple H is in there.
Triple H,
that's a good time.
Is in
I
that movie.
I love Triple H.
I don't need Jessica Biel as like Junior Whistler.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It was very disappointing. And
everybody
I don't think David Goyer is an especially good director.
Well, I think time has been. I think time has shown us what kind of director David Goyer.
Perhaps. And what kind of writer he might be as well. Although he again keeps getting handed scripts.
Yeah, I've gotten my fill. I'm good.
I know he was kind of up against it on that movie and had a very difficult time making that movie because he and Wesley Snipes did not get along. And I think Wesley Snipes was like threatening to kill him.
Oh.
So I want to cut him some slack. But yeah, Blade Trinity is a disappointment. And perhaps, I don't know if it was that or, you know, Wesley Snipes going to prison that ended the franchise, but
I'm just sort of reminded of like at the end of Miami Vice, which is another movie that both of us like, that you can just sort of tell that Colin Farrell is about to like just check himself into rehab as soon as he turned the cameras off.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Have you ever read about the production of that movie?
I haven't read it. I've like read not like, yeah, just like articles and just okay. He was a total mess. He was not in a good place.
Well, they had to, I mean, rewrite the entire last act of that movie. It completely changed because Jamie Foxx wouldn't go to the country that they were supposed to shoot the entire finale in. So that whole shootout that happens was basically like thrown together last minute because they had to scrap the original ending of the movie.
And Michael Mann is awesome.
Yeah, well, yeah. So that was not an easy movie to make either, but it turned out better than Blade Trinity, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yes. There's a lot of things better than Blade Trinity, guys.
Blade is, I would argue, a little long. I don't know. I mean, it's not boring ever.
No, it moves along.
But I don't know that it needs to be a full 120 minutes.
Sure. I think it's a pretty, this is going to sound weird for a movie that's 2 hours, but I think it's pretty economic. Like, it's, I don't feel like there's a lot of like wasted whatever. There's just a couple of things. Like,
sure.
They bring back, I always felt that this was weird. They bring back the mother as like, surprise.
Right.
She's the lover of Deacon Frost.
Right.
And I'm like, I think that's supposed to mean something to me. I think that's supposed to be some sort of like emotional gut punch or something, but I'm like, I don't feel anything.
No, not really. I mean, even this notion that, right, that Blade somehow has to kill the past.
It's like, eh, it didn't really
doesn't land
pop out as much.
Right,
as
and all that's weird about it is like how much his mom is coming on to him.
Yeah, it's weird.
Which, he's Blade. I get it. He's the Daywalker.
Right.
You know?
My favorite part is when he stakes her and then she crumbles into the dust. But the last thing to crumble is like her weave.
Yes.
Which I find hilarious.
I do too. And it was another one of those moments where I was like, this movie keeps changing the rules as it goes along.
Right.
Because even when the blonde Eurotrash gets the garlic sprayed in her mouth, like her head explodes. Well, we haven't seen that before, but
right.
Okay.
That's fine. That's what garlic spray does.
I guess.
Beware. Beware.
I listened to just a little bit of the commentary, and it's interesting because they're talking about that scene, and I don't remember who it was that was talking about it, but they're talking about the scene early on with Tim Guinea and Nebuchadnezzar Wright where they're essentially doing the autopsy on Donald Logue's charred
corpse. They're having a little like, oh, well, like they dated before, and it's like,
right.
Oh, can we go back to that again?
And I guess the studio so pushed weird. Very hard to get rid of that. Like, why is this in the movie? Stephen Norrington and I think David Goyer were the ones who were saying like, no, the scare only works if we're lulled into this dumb dialogue,
sure,
you know? And I think it also, while the dialogue is not particularly interesting, I do think that it works as a representation of, because Wesley Snipes literally says it out loud at one point to Nebuchadnezzar Wright, like, there's a whole other world that you don't know about. Your world is just kind of superficial and you're on the surface, but there's all this other shit going on. And that's really the moment where that comes true. It's like you think that what you're talking about with your ex matters and is important, and then 2 seconds later, a vampire exists and is murdering you both, and it's like, yeah, wake up. Here's what's going on.
Yeah.
It's a cool moment.
Oh, that's I don't know. That's
yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else about Blade you want to say?
I think that's all I had.
You feel like we covered it?
I think so. Wesley Snipes, come back. Steven, what's his name? What's the director?
Dorf.
No.
Oh, Norrington. Which, by the way, I literally looked it up. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was his last movie. Like, he quit movies after League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which I don't remember liking.
No,
at all.
It was really bad.
But maybe I need to revisit it. Maybe it's better than I remember?
No. It's really bad.
But it seemed so cool. Like, on paper, it was such a neat idea.
Yeah, they don't really...
And I was excited by the trailer, but I remember there being terrible CG in that movie as well.
Yeah, they don't really know what to do with that many characters.
Right.
They just didn't know what to do.
Also, they cast, what, like Shane West as Huck Finn?
Because they're like, you know what? We need to have an American
this
character.
This movie needs a heartthrob.
All of these are British characters.
And
Americans
PETA,
don't understand British things. PETA Wilson.
La Femme Nikita. Like, talk about an early 2000s time capsule. Where did PETA Wilson go?
I don't know. She is probably hanging out with Mr. Norrington.
I never watched the La Femme Nikita show.
I didn't either.
And I also didn't watch the one with Maggie Q.
Yeah, the second La Femme Nikita show with Lindsay Fonseca.
I went with Maggie Q.
Yeah, I like Maggie Q better as well. I didn't watch that one either.
No.
Yeah. Rest in R.I.P. Alan Quartermain.
That's right.
We never knew ye.
Well, he came back from the grave at the end. Don't worry.
He always does. I miss Sean Connery so much. Still around.
I don't,
right?
Oddly enough.
I miss him.
He beat his wife, so he can stay.
They keep on trying to put him into away. They try to keep on putting him into a James Bond movie, and I don't know.
What a good idea.
How original.
What a fun reminder. Oh, I get it. Because once he played James Bond, like, how is this going to be
any
good?
And that's the setup and the punchline all
right,
in one.
But that's what we do now. These legacy callbacks.
Right, don't you get it, though? But that's what a joke is. You just show the thing.
Right.
It's a joke.
Right. So if we ever get the Blade remake,
right?
Well, Wesley Snipes will just show up for a cameo.
Absolutely.
And he'll say something like, some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill. And we'll all laugh because we recognize the line.
And then there will be a guy in the back actually trying to skate uphill. It's like, no, really, we have to skate uphill because I'm running a theme park, and then this is the ride that I have.
I don't feel like that's what Deacon Frost is doing at that moment. Metaphorically, I don't feel like he's trying to ice skate uphill.
You're right, because he did successfully.
He became the blood god.
Into La Maga.
Right, exactly.
He did it. Does La Maga mean, in Vampirese, does it mean, I can't think of another name.
I do like that moment where, when Donald Logue first gets pinned to the wall. Where he's like speaking in tongues.
Right.
It's neat.
Or Hungarian.
Or is it?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I just assumed it was gibberish. But it might be a real language.
Poor Donald Logue.
And I apologize.
It's okay.
To everyone if he's speaking a real language.
How dare you?
Right? I'm insensitive.
How dare you?
Like a motherfucker. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Please remember that 1989 week is coming next week. So visit fthismovie.com every single day and make sure that you check out, reserve, buy, stream, download, rent all five movies for F This Movie Fest.
It'll be fun.
March 3rd at noon Central Standard Time. It's going to be awesome. Thanks, Mark, for talking Blade with
me. Absolutely. I appreciate that even though you and I share the spot at the top of the food chain, that you would allow me to have this podcast with you. Thanks. You're my favorite black superhero.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.